So today is one of the most auspicious days of the year and celebrated around the world as the appearance day of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Ramchandra. Sri Ramchandra Ki Jai. So for the next 3 days, we're going to be churning the ocean of Ram's pastimes, Ram's character, and try to understand a little more deeper what it means to actually be a devotee, and also to understand deeper the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his most, what we say, magnanimous feature, Sri Ramchandra. So this is a verse from the second canto. Where's the switch on? Okay. And this is from the seventh chapter, entitled Scheduled Incarnations. So I'll read the translation in purport. We can do the verse together. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Asman Prasada Sukumam Kalaya Kalesa. His flock Uvamsa Avitirya Guru Nidese. Tishtam vanasva dayata nuja avivesa. Yasmin virudhya dasa kandhara atma archat. Asman prasara sukumu. Asmar prasada sumukha palakalaya kalesha. Is fla kuvamsa avitirya guru nidese. Tishtan vanasa dayata nuja avisvesa. Yasmin viruda dasa kandara artim archatan. Chat. Ladies. Asmat. Unto us, beginning from Brahma, down to the insignificant ant. Prasada. Causeless mercy. Sumukha. So inclined. Kalaya. With his plenary extensions. Kalesa. The Lord of all potencies. Isflaku. Maharaj Isflaku. In the dynasty of the sun. Vamse. Family. Avitirya. By descending in. Guru. Of the father or spiritual master. Nidese. Under the order of Tishtan, being situated in Vanam, in the forest, Sadayita Anuja, along with his wife and younger brother, Avivesa, entered Yasmin, unto whom Viruda, being rebellious, Dasakandara, Ravana, who had 10 heads, Artim, great distress, Archat, achieved. Translation, due to his causeless mercy upon the living entities within the universe, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, along with his plenary extensions, appeared in the family of Maharaj Isflaku as the Lord of the internal energy, Sita. Under the order of his father, Maharaj Dasarath, he entered the forest and lived there for considerable years with his wife and younger brother. Ravana, who was very materially powerful, with 10 heads on his shoulders, committed a great offense against him, was thus ultimately vanquished. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Lord Ramachandra is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and his brothers named Bart, Lakshman, and Shatrughna are his plenary expansions. All four brothers are Vishnu Tattva, and were never ordinary human beings. There are many unscrupulous and ignorant commentators on the Ramayana who present the younger brothers of Lord Ramachandra as ordinary living entities. But here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the most authentic scripture on the science of God, is clearly stated that his brothers were his plenary expansions. Originally, Lord Ramachandra is an incarnation of Vasudeva. Lakshman is the incarnation of Sankarsana. Bart is the incarnation of Pradyumna, and Shatrughna is the incarnation of Aniruddha, expansions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lakshmiji, Sita, is the internal potency of the Lord, and is neither an ordinary woman, nor the external potency incarnation of Durga. Durga is the external potency of the Lord, and she is associated with Lord Shiva. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 4:7, the Lord appears when there are discrepancies in the discharge of factual religion. Lord Ramachandra also appeared under the same circumstances, accompanied by his brothers, who are expansions of the Lord's internal potency, and by Lakshmiji, Sitadev. Lord Ramachandra was ordered by his father, Maharaj Dasarath, to leave home for the forest under awkward circumstances, and the Lord, as the ideal son of his father, carried out the order, even on the occasion of his being declared the king of Ayodhya. One of his younger brothers, Lakshmanji, desired to go with him, and so also his eternal wife, Sitaji, desired to go with him. The Lord agreed to both of them, and altogether they entered the Danyakaranya forest to live there for 14 years. During their stay in the forest, there was some quarrel between Ramachandra and Ravana, and the latter kidnapped the Lord's wife, Sita. The quarrel ended in the vanquishing of the greatly powerful Ravan, along with his kingdom and family. Sita is Lakshmiji, or the goddess of fortune, but she is never to be enjoyed by any living being. She is meant to be worshipped by the living being along with her husband, Sri Ramachandra. A materialistic man like Ravana does not understand this great truth, but on the contrary, he wants to snatch Sita Devi from the custody of Ram and thus incurs great miseries. The materialists who are after opulence and material prosperity may take lessons from the Ramayana that the policy of exploiting the nature of the Lord without acknowledging the supremacy of the Lord is the policy of Ravana. Ravana was very advanced materially, so much so that he turned his kingdom, Lanka, into pure gold, or full material wealth. But because he did not recognize the supremacy of Lord Ramachandra and defied him by stealing his wife, Sita, Ravana was killed and all his opulence and power were destroyed. Lord Ramachandra is a full incarnation with six opulences in full. And he is therefore mentioned in this verse as Kalesha, or the master of all opulence. Om Agyan Timidandasya Ganajana Salakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobistam Staptitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swam Padantikam Bandeham Sri Guru Sri Yutapade Kamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Si rupam sagrajatam sahaganat raganatam vitam tam sajivam sadvaitam sarvadutam parijana sahitam krishna chaitanya devam sri radha krishna padam sahagana lalita sri vishakam vitamscha hey krishna karuna sindhu dina bandhu jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Brindavaneswari Vrishabhanu Suti Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Pancha Kalpa Tarubhischa Kripa Sindhu Bhavacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavaibhyo Namaho Namaha Shri Krishna, Chaitanya, Prabhu, Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhar, Sivasadi, Gaura Bhaktivya, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Prastaya Bhutale, Sri Makti Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tinamene, Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gaudavani Pacharine Nirvisesa Sunyavari Pastyatyare Satayana. So, this is a very wonderful occasion. Actually, throughout the world, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is celebrated as Sri Ramachandra in many, many countries, not just in India, Lanka, Taiwan, and all the Southeast and Asian countries, and even so many Western countries, honor this particular day by glorifying the Lord in His most, what we say, righteous incarnation. He is called Maryada Purushottam. That means He is the Supreme Person. Purushottam means the best of all persons. Uttama means the best, and Puru means person. He is the best of them, but he is Maryada. He is the perfect person who carries out religious principles in the most ideal and exemplary way, without deviation an iota. In other words, he is the ideal human being, the ideal person to practice religion, and he performs his role as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all three in one. There's so much to learn from the Ramayana. You can read it over and over and over and over and over and over again. And each time you'll find so many deeper meanings and so many valuable gems of spiritual knowledge which can be used in our practice of Krishna consciousness. We honor Ramchandra as the Lord, but we also learn from him what is the ideal in all position. His appearance is quite interesting, and as Prabhupada mentions here in the purport, the Lord appears when there's some discrepancy or some deviation, not only deviation, but severe deviations by the general population in the practice of religion. And he comes, and he brings his entourage. The scene is set on the material level for the Lord's appearance, but it always appears to be some difficulties to bring about the appearance of the Lord. It does not so easy. And we have Jai Sisi Panchatattva Ki Jai, Sisi Gornitai Ki Jai. We have the most amazing arrangement that is preceding the Lord's appearance in this world. Of course, Prabhupada said, this appearance of the Lord is more than 2 million years ago. So this is one of the oldest incarnations of the Lord that we have records of. 2 million, from the Treta Yuga, actually, it goes back. So Krishna appeared at the end of Dwapara Yuga, but Ramchandra appeared in the 28th millennium of the Treta Yuga. And, his father was practically the king of the world. His name was Dasarath. He got that name from some very magnanimous and very powerful heroic fight. The demigods asked him to fight this one powerful demon named Sambatsura. Sambatsura was a mystical demon, and the demigods could not defeat him. He could expand himself in 10 different forms of himself and fight from 10 different directions. Imagine trying to fight a person who is very skilled in archery and fighting, and he's coming at you in 10 different directions. I mean, the demigods couldn't handle that. So they asked Dasarath, can you fight this demon? And he had a very difficult time. And finally he did destroy the demon with the help of his wonderful wife, Kaikeyi, who not only assisted him by driving the chariot that he was fighting on, but at the same time saved his life during the battle. Twice she saved his life. So it was a great fight, and then he was awarded the name Dasarath. Dasa means 10 and Rath means chariot. He fought so valiantly, it seemed like his chariot was in 10 directions at the same time. Although he didn't expand himself like the demon did, still, he was so fast and so expert that he was fighting the demon in 7-10 different places at the same time. And he received the great honorific title as Dasaratha. His name was King Nime, N-I-M-E. That was his actual name, but he received the name Dasarath. And so now he's the ruler of the world. He has everything. He has a kingdom known as Ayodhya, which is 96 miles in length and 24 miles in width. The citizens of the kingdom are all highly qualified in religious principles. They are very obedient to the citizens. The kingdom is full of wealth. There's hardly any poverty, hardly any disease, no calamity. There are no thieves and no criminals in the entire Ayodhya. He rules with such, what we say, compassion. He was known as very kind to his citizens, but very strict at the same time. If a leader is simply kind and not strict, he's not a leader. He's not a leader. And if a leader is very strict and not compassionate, he's not a leader. He has to blend these two qualities together very strong in keeping religious principles foremost in his own practice and teaching that to others. And at the same time, very caring to those who are under his care. This is a real leader. Sometimes people like kind leaders, but they don't have any qualities because they keep changing, because they want to be known as a nice person to everyone. And they really can't get anything done. People may like him, but he just gives them what they like or cannot enforce real religious traditions. Or then you have the strict kind that are simply hard in the way they rule and rule very according to principles, but they're not kind in compassion and cannot adjust to a situation in order to deal with people's needs and care. Dasarath was the ideal leader. He had both of those qualities in full. And he had what is called the Big M. The Big M was his ministers. There were seven ministers who were under his care, and they took care of all the affairs of the kingdom by his direction. He was guided by Vasishta, who was his priest, and Sumantra, who was his chief minister. He took guidance from them, and they ruled the citizens with great love, care, concern, and expertise. The country of Ayodhya, or you might say the city of Ayodhya, was flourishing. It was like the spiritual world on earth. But one thing, Dasarath was not happy. Although he had everything in terms of allegiance, ministers, power, and of course he also had 353 wives, not just three. If they say three, that means they don't really know the Ramayana. He had 353 wives, and three of them were prominent, Kausalya, Kaikeyi, and Sumitra. They were his principal queens. So Kaikeyi was the youngest and most beautiful, and Kausalya was the most, what we say, religious. They were all the followers of Dasarath, what we say, 100%. His marriages were ideal, but he had one very huge, discouraging mentality that was haunting him. He could not produce an heir to the throne. Although he tried to bring about progeny, it didn't work. Now, being a king, and he was getting on in age, you need your heir. You need the prince to come and take over the responsibility. That is the main duty of a king, is to leave behind someone to succeed him and carry on the tradition. He couldn't produce an heir. He was beside himself. He consulted his ministers. Finally, his minister Sumantra told him a story about Sunat Kumara. And Sunat Kumara was explaining that in order to become successful in bringing, you have to perform the Aswamedha Yajna. In other words, the horse sacrifice. And so, but at the same time, it was not enough to bring about the heir of the throne. Now, Dasarath did have one daughter. Her name was Shanta. Now, there was a neighboring king whose name was Romapad. Now, Romapad had no issues of himself, and he could not also have a child. So Dasarath, feeling compassion towards Romapad, gave Romapad his daughter to live in his kingdom. So Susanta, although the daughter of Dasarath, was brought up by Romapad. Now, at one point, Ramapada's kingdom went undergo a great drought. There was no rain for years. Now this was destroying the crops. The citizens were in anxiety. The king was trying everything. He performed all kinds of sacrifices. Nothing happened. He was besides himself. Finally, one of his, one of his ministers, I can't remember his name, said, actually, there is a great sage who lives in the forest. He has such power that if you bring him to the kingdom, he will perform a sacrifice, and my dear king, there will be rain in your kingdom. His name is Rishyasringa. But the problem with Rishyasringa, or the problem is that he was living in this forest under the care of his father. And his father would not allow him to leave the forest nor to associate with anybody. He was not allowed to go out to do anything. He simply stayed in the hermitage under his father's care. His father was very strict. Now, Rishyasringa was quite an unusual personality. He wasn't just an ordinary human being. And he had two horns coming out of his head. He was kind of like an animal, but in actually a form of a man. Now, his father realized he was quite unusual, having a son like that. But at the same time, whenever he performed any sacrifices, because of Rishyasringa's presence, everything flourishes. His father's name was, what was his name? Something Bunda, something Nakabunda, another, that was a demon, there was another Bunda. Can't remember his name, but anyway, he took care of his son like what we say, one keeps gold within one's room, locked up, tightly. So his son never was able to meet any other persons. Now the boy was about a teenager. So this advisor to King Ramapada says, you have to bring Rishyasringa to this and marry him with your daughter Shanta. And together they will perform a sacrifice and you will have rain. So a plot was made to somehow allure Rishyasringa away. Now his father would go occasionally to gather fruits and roots and things for cooking. So his son would stay alone in the hermitage, but he would always give him certain instructions. Don't leave. And he was very obedient to his father. So he would never leave. So Ramapada, along with this minister, made a plan to have three very beautiful young girls, who were actually prostitutes, come and allure Rishyasringa away. That was the plot. Haribo. And so, these girls, and he had never saw a woman in his life before. So he never knew what a woman was. His only experience with any human beings was his father, and once in a while he would see sages in the forest. He never saw a lady. His father made sure of that. And so we might say he was the ideal brahmachari. So he was there, and these girls came, all very nicely decorated up with all their costumes, and they brought baskets full of wonderful sweets. So they took the opportunity when his father was there, and they came into the hermitage. And he was thinking, oh, who are these sages? I've never seen sages that look like this before. They don't look like ordinary sages, but they seem to be so nice. And so they came and they start speaking to him nice words and they start offering him these sweets. And he was eating them. He was more, what we say, enchanted by the sages than the so-called sages, than the sweets. And so he started to eat and then his mind started to become a little changed. And he was feeling a little bit uneasy. I'm feeling some attraction for these sages, but I don't know what it is. In other words, they were arousing his lusty desires. And therefore, they attracted him so much so that he actually couldn't stop thinking of them. They left. Now his mind was disturbed. Who were these sages? I have this strange feeling that I want to go meet them again. They are so powerful, so nice. And so his mind was disturbed. So one time when his father was away, he decided to go find the sages, who were actually prostitutes. And it was arranged that someone would meet him and eventually take him to the kingdom of Romapada. And that's what happened. He left. Romapada greeted him and said, "Now please come and marry my daughter Shanta." He had already been, what we say, weakened in his spiritual practice. So attraction to ladies became so much a regular thing now. And so he married the daughter of Shanta. But he still had his power of doing sacrifices. So they performed a great sacrifice together, and after that it rained. The ministers were telling Dasarath about Rishyasringa, "You have to bring Shanta and Rishyasringa to the kingdom. They will perform a sacrifice. First you perform the horse sacrifice. After the successful horse sacrifice, then you have to perform what is called the Putrasthi Yajna. And that can only be done successfully by Rishyasringa and his wife Shanta. They are the only ones qualified to do this yajna." So Dasarath, he's eager to get a son, and he's hearing from his ministers, this is the only way. So after performing the horse sacrifice and becoming successful, now he's performing the Putrasthi sacrifice. And Rishyasringa performed the sacrifice, and out of the fire of the yajna came a beautiful personality holding a golden pot. The personality was as black as night, but he was dressed in gold earrings and gold ornaments and gold crowned, and he was holding this gold pot. And then this pot was offered to the priests who were to Rishyasringa, who took the pot and then offered it to Dasarath. He said, "In this pot is Havasyana. It has the potency to bring about great progeny within the family. So choose your wives and give them accordingly." So Dasarath was very inspired by this. So the yogi was successful. Rishyasringa went back to the kingdom of Romapada, and Dasarath had this, what we say, magical and potency. And there he took some and he divided it into three parts. And he gave one half, he divided into half, and then he divided a second half into half. So he took the first half and he gave it to his principal queen, Kaushalya. He took one of the second halves and gave it to, let me see if I get this portion right. He gave it to Kaikeyi. And then Kaikeyi actually had more, and then there was one-eighth left, and that was given to Sumitra. So from that later, four illustrious sons were born. From Kaushalya, Ram appeared. From Sumitra, Suchugna and Lakshman appeared. And from Kaikeyi, Bart appeared. They are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudev, Sankarshan, Aniruddha, and Pradyumna. And now Dasarath is overjoyed. He has these children. Wonderful children. As they were growing up, he was noticing their qualities. They had natural attraction for each other. Lakshman could not stay away from Ram, and Shatrughna and Bart were like inseparable. The brothers paired off, but they loved each other equally, but they had their own pair within the four like that. And so the kingdom really became a whole different thing. Now Radhasarat was, as you might say, in very layman's term, he was over the moon. He was really happy. And the children were, what we say, ideal in all character, behavior. They were so beautiful. They listened to, what we say, their parents, ideally. Everything a person wants in a child, but much more. They had so many wonderful qualities. They were very respectful to all, very obedient, very, very beautiful to look at, very, very, what we say. They could learn as soon as they heard. Whatever they heard, they learned. No, this was the quality of these four children who were actually Sri Ramchandra, Lakshman, Shatrughna, and Bharat. So this is the appearance of Ram. But it is explained that while this was happening in the heavenly planets, there was some big concern. Because on earth there was this one personality. He was known as Dasagriva. Griva means head, and Dasa means 10. One person who was born from this great sage named Vishrava, and whose wife was Sumali. No, I'm sorry, his wife was Kaikishka. Kaikishka's father was Sumali. Sumali was a demon. Sumali wanted to produce a son from his daughter, who was very chaste, that would be the ideal person. So he arranged for Sumali to somehow disguise herself and allure Vishrava. And Vishrava had union with Kaikishka, and from that was four children born. Ravana, Kumbhakarna, Vibhishan, and Suparnaka. One girl and three boys, like that. Another foursome, but not like the other foursome. So, this Dasagriva, who had 10 heads, he was born from a demoniac mother. It says in the Shastras, the boy takes on the qualities of the mother, the girl takes on the qualities of the father. Generally. Not 100%, but that is generally the situation, even in today. We usually see that wherever we go. The boy takes on the qualities of the mother, the daughter, the father, generally. And so, the boys, except for Vibhishan. Now Vibhishan, although he was born from the same family, he has some religious sentiment. His father's qualities seemed to enter into him more than his mother's qualities. And he was, what we say, pious. Although born with a demoniac mother. Suparnaka, she was the youngest of all, and she was very wicked. Kumbhakarna was just a powerful monster. And Ravana was actually a very respectable person in the sense that he had great learning. He studied the Vedas. His father, of course, was Vishrava, one of the greatest of all sages at the time. And so his knowledge of Vedas was vast. He knew the Shastras. So even today, we find people who study scripture, but their motivations and their lifestyle is completely opposite of scripture. They use scripture in order to exploit other people or to get their own way. In other words, you've heard the old saying, devil citing Shastra. Devil, sometimes we say that, demo quoting the Bible, like that. So using Shastra in order to, what we say, propagate or proliferate one's evil intentions. So this was Dasagriva, although a great personality in terms of learning, and he was very, very handsome. He had 10 heads, but he could retract those and have only one. I mean, if you see somebody with 10 heads, you don't think they're so beautiful, right? Which one do you talk to? It's a little confusing. But he could expand himself with 10 heads, but he has one form, like a human. Although he wasn't human, he was Rakshasa. Rakshasa is a race of beings that are above the humans. They have a planet outside of the earth. There are planets of Rakshasas that exist outside of the earth's atmosphere, within the range of the middle planetary systems. And they're very powerful beings. They also develop mystic power also. So he came from that family. Now, he wanted to be more powerful. So he performed austerities along with his brother, Kupakarna, to become more and more powerful. They approached Lord Brahma to become powerful and more powerful. Brahma appeared to Ravana and said, "What do you want?" Ravana said, "Well, actually, I want to be immortal, same as Aranyakashipu." Actually, if we understand clearly, that same person who appeared as Aranyakashipu later appeared as Ravana. It was the same person. Now he's in this form, and he's asking for the same benediction. Brahma says, "I can't give you something that I don't have. We are mortal beings. Although we live long, we still have to leave this body." So Ravana was thinking, "All right, I don't want to be killed by demigods. I don't want to be killed by other Rakshasas." And he lists various types of beings he didn't want to be killed by. And so he in so many ways got the benediction of being free from death by these beings. But when it came to humans, he was thinking, "What human being can kill a Rakshasa? These humans are so puny anyway. So I don't even give me that benediction because it's an insult." His pride was like, "Humans? They're just useless. They fall over." That was Ravana. He was seeing like that. And so he didn't ask for that. So he got what we say, his own understanding of that, his immortality. Now his brother, Kubakarna, was already terrorizing the universe. He was so huge and causing the demigods. So when the demigods heard that Brahma was going to give a benediction to, they said, "Brahma, you can't do that. He's already causing hell. There's not going to be anything left of the universe if you give this guy any more power." What to do? Okay. So Brahma came to Saraswati and said, "Saraswati, you are expert at the art of speech. So when he is about to ask for a benediction, you peer on his tongue and say something different." She can do that. She has that power. So when it came, Brahma said, "Yes, what is your desire?" "I want to sleep." She appeared on his tongue and he said the word sleep. And then he said, "What did I say?" "Tatastu." "So be it." That means we give you the bed. Brahma acted fast. Dasagriva, Ravana, said, "You can't do that. You can't just make him sleep. You have to retract this." He says, "When a benediction is offered, it cannot be retracted. But since you are asking, I'll give him the escape clause. That he can sleep 364 days a year, and one day a year he can get up and he can eat." So eating and sleeping. That's Kumbhakarna. So that was the best, and so he had to settle for that. So immediately he went to sleep. So that was the power. Now, Dasagriva, he's terrorizing the whole area. He wants to become more and more powerful. He usurps his cousin. His cousin is named Kuvera. He usurps Kuvera's vimana, his chariot, and starts traveling all over, trying to become more and more powerful. That is a long story about Ravana challenged various types of personalities to fights. He attacked various types of ladies to fulfill his lusty desires. That was Ravana. He was cruelty personified and lust personified. It is explained that in the Shastras, and this is very important, that each of the six demons, based on the incarnations of Jai and Vijay, or the manifestations of Jai and Vijay, represents one of the outstanding anarthas. Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Mohan, Madha, Matsarya. Kama, lust, Krodha, anger, Lobha, greed, Moha, illusion, Madha, pride, and Matsarya, envy. These are the six enemies of the conditioned soul, which is explained that at any time one can be affected or afflicted or attacked by any one of these. And unless one is fixed in their practice of Krishna consciousness, you see sometimes, right? You're chanting Hare Krishna and something comes into the mind that shouldn't be there. Right? Or just when you're in day-to-day life, some really horrible thought or some bad thought, maybe something bad towards another person or some kind of sensual thought comes into the mind. That means these things are there both outside and inside. So they're called the six enemies of the conditioned soul. Each of these six demons represents one of these. In fact, all of the demons, each of the demons have all of these, but they have one that's outstanding. So what was Ravana's outstanding? Who knows? Lust. He was so lusty, and he had, as it mentions here in the translation, or actually in the purport, he had a kingdom that was made from gold. Everything in the kingdom was solid gold. All the buildings, all the ornaments, everything was made of pure gold. He had taken gold from every place and built his kingdom. And he had many, many ladies. His principal queen was Mandodari. She was a very actually chaste lady, and she was his most favored queen, but he had so many mothers. But he was never satisfied. It says in the Bhagavad Gita, lust is like a burning fire. The more you feed it, the more it becomes unsatisfied. Sometimes people think, well, I have these lusty feelings. I should do something to get rid of them. So we find some, what we say, object or something to relieve the lust, and then you might think, oh, I feel good now, I'm fine. No. It's like pouring fuel on the fire. The immediate, what we say, response is that the fire may go down when you throw a log onto the fire. It does. But give it some time, and the fire will burn brighter than it was before. So every time we feed our lust, we actually, in order to get rid of it, or get rid of the pain that it's causing us, we just cause it to become stronger and stronger, like that. So therefore, in Krishna consciousness, we have what is called regulation. regulation. And when Krishna was asked by Arjuna, what is that? What causes a person to act sinfully, even if they don't want to, or don't desire to? And Krishna says, Kama Esha Krodha Esha Rajaguna Samudbhava Mahashap Mahapapap Mahashatno Viha Vidveha Viha Varinam Vidveha Viha Varinam. Krishna says it is lust and lust only which comes in contact with the material mode of passion, later transformed into anger, which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of the world. The desire to fulfill one's selfish desires by exploiting others or exploiting one's own self by trying to consume as much material happiness as possible. And this is lust. And therefore, it's the number one enemy of the conditioned soul and number one enemy of the aspiring sadhaka, one who is engaged in devotional service. So Ravana represents that. He was so lusty. He had everything, but he was unsatisfied. And this is very instructive, that the more you have, if you don't have what we say peace of mind in your heart, if you're not feeling happy within your heart based on your relationship with the Supreme, you'll look for something to fulfill that in different ways. And therefore, we go towards material things to fill that void of Krishna consciousness. But what it causes us is to go farther away from the goal. Therefore, there is called austerity. Austerity means restriction. Austerity helps one to develop purity, and austerity helps one to become what we say free from the tendency to enjoy material life, which is the cause of all suffering. Suffering is not caused by other people. Suffering is caused by our own desire to enjoy in this world. That is the cause of suffering. If we blame other people for it, we're not understanding how things are actually working. Everything is working according to the laws of material energy. And when we desire something material, we put in action a set of reactions that cause us to get a particular response to our desire. And that usually is a mixture of happiness and distress, and distress. But all material happiness ultimately leads to distress, because everything material has two sides to it. Where there is good, there is bad. Where there is light, there is darkness. You can't say, well, I just want light. No. Because material energy is duality, it gives you both sides. So that is the nature. So therefore, Ravana, he was thinking, I want to be immortal. I have so many followers. I have so many, so much opulences, so many queens, everything. But he was not happy. And you might say, well, he's the epitome of success. He has everything everybody ever wanted. Undisputed. But still, no peace. Why? Because the heart cannot be satisfied by material things. The heart can only be satisfied by Krishna or by loving relationships. And therefore, because he was very exploitive and simply wanted more for himself, not caring who he offended or who he caused harm to, he was always unhappy. But always thinking, if I get more, I will be more and more happy. The false sense of happiness, where one looks around and says, I am happy because I have so much. Therefore, the mind convinces, yes, you're happy, you're wealthy, you got followers, you got bodily beauty, you have so many things, you're happy. You convince yourself, yes, I'm happy. I got it. I made it. I'm successful. But when you realize, actually, you're not. You sort of cheat yourself in believing that you have something. So this was Ravana. He had everything, but at the same time, he was empty inside. And so, he used to go on these escapades to try and exploit others to increase his material power, or his material, what we say, wealth, prestige. And it's a very wonderful, we'll get into some of that later on. Tonight I'll speak a little bit about Ravana. Today I wanted to speak about the appearance of Lord Ramchandra. But his appearance is connected with Ravana in the sense that the demigods were so concerned about this Ravana that they decided to do something. So they prayed to Lord Brahma, and Lord Brahma went to the milk ocean and begged the Lord to come, and the Lord appeared as Ravana, Shatrughna, Bart, and Lakshmana. These four were the fulfillment of the desires of the demigods in order to destroy this powerful Rakshasa. Now, it wasn't enough for Ravana to come. The demigods also were told by Lord Brahma, we want all of you will also accompany the Lord in his lila of destroying this demon, and you will become very, very powerful monkeys. You will be known as the Vanaras. And you'll be a race that will be invincible. You'll have knowledge. You'll have power. You'll have great strength. You'll have so many qualities in the form of monkeys. And so the demigods, millions of them actually incarnated, these demigods from the higher planets incarnated into the forms of these monkeys. Sugriva's son was a monkey and his name was, not Sugriva. Vivashwan's son was Sugriva. Indra's son was Bali. Varuna's son was, everybody knows? Vayu's son was Hanuman. Also Varuna. It was also Gadamadana. His son, he was the son of one of the demigods. I think he was Varuna. So all the major demigods produced these sons who were very, very powerful monkeys to assist the Lord in his ridding the world. So this is a little bit about the scene that sets the stage for this wonderful life story of Sri Ramchandra. And there's much more. Take some time and read about it. There is Valmiki's Ramayan, which is the highly recommended Ramayan of, and then of course there's one devotee, Subhas Vilas from Chaupati, who has put out a series of books. And he's writing them now, 7 books on the Ramayana, which are amazing. 3 of them are available, and I think maybe you might have one of them here, the first copy. No? You didn't get that yet. Oh, it's amazing. He's combined Valmiki's Ramayana with a Ramayana called Kamba. Kamba was an author of the Ramayana also, and he was from the Sri Sampradaya, and he wrote the life of Ram. When he wrote it, all the other sages were saying, oh no, another version of Ramayana. We got so many. So they criticized him. What are you writing? So he said, no, this is a very authorized version of the Ramayana. They said, you have to prove it. He said, I will prove it. So he took all the sages in front of the Didi of the Sringadev, who was there in the Sri Rangam temple. And he said, I will recite this Ramayana in front of Lord Nrisimhadeva and he will give his verdict. So when he recited it, all the sages listened. Lord Nrisimhadeva was there. At the end of the recitation, Lord Nrisimhadeva went like this. He brought his arm up to give assurance, this is bona fide. So the deity is still like this. Yeah, Sri Rangam Temple. So this particular version is a combination of Valmiki's and Kamba's Ramayana. It's a very amazing one. It's full of adventure and very, very interesting parts. 7 books, 3 are available. I have the first 3. And the first one, of course, is about the appearance of Sri Ramchandra. Any questions about Ramayana? On any about Lord Ramchandra? Today we'll speak about the appearance tonight also a little bit more, focusing a little bit on Ravana. Since it's in the evening time, we talk about demons more. Demons get power in the evening. I also become a little more powerful because of my nature. Yes. Yeah. Why didn't he? Ramachandra was there. I mean, Parasaram was there. But he had a different mission. His mission was to rid the world of what we say, these so-called Kshatriya kings who were leading the world in the wrong way. It's interesting that you bring up Parasaram because Parasaram wanted to attack Dasarath also. Yeah, it's mentioned in Kamba's Ramayana. He would go to the kingdom of Ayodhya to fight with Dasarath, but Parasaram had one condition. He would not fight with a king who was involved with marriage. So Dasarath would always arrange to have a marriage going every time Parasaram came. So he wouldn't have to fight with Parasaram. That's why he got married with 353 ladies. So it was good business to have marriage. Kept him alive. But as far as Ravana is concerned, it doesn't make a connection. When it seemed like, actually, Parasaram was not in the category of a human being. So in one sense, he couldn't kill Ravana in that sense, because the benediction was only a human was exempt from the benediction. He was an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he was kind of like a wild man. He was a matted hair, wearing deer skin, carrying weapons. He looked like a Jungleese person from the jungle. Just to see him, people would get scared. There's a nice encounter between Ram and Parasaram. That's right after the wedding of Ram with Sita. That's an interesting little, I'll narrate that also. That was, okay, yeah. Anything else? Any comments on this great epic? How many of you have read the Ramayana? Ooh. I'll ask you again tonight. Please read it. Once you pick it up, you're hooked. You can't put it down. It's just an amazing. There's so many wonderful things. You have two complete opposites. The ideal in all aspects of life, Sri Ram, and the most degraded, sinful, cruel Ravana's name was. Ravana, translated, means one who causes others to cry. That's the actual meaning of the word Ravana. One who causes others to cry. He was so cruel. So you have, he was an egomaniac. Should I tell you one cruel thing he did? You like to hear cruel things, okay. That's Slovenia, right? Okay. All right. So, yeah, his cousin, who was Kubera, the treasurer of the demigods, wanted to make a petition to Ravana to kind of, you know, to cease from some of his activities. So he sent a messenger to plead with Ravana to, you know, change his course. So the messenger came very respectfully and came on behalf of his cousin and started to speak. Ravana got so mad that he came up, he took his sword and cut off the head of the messenger before he even finished. He didn't like to hear anything that was against what he wanted. Poor messenger. It describes in very detail how that happened. So this is Ravana, very, very cruel. So we'll speak about him a little bit tonight. So we'll then also speak more about the qualities of Ramchandra and some of the messages that are very, so prominent in the Ramayana. There are so many messages, unlimited amounts of understandings of how we can improve our Krishna consciousness in a very moralistic way, how to interact with each and every situation in such a way that we're living according to religious principles. That's the Ramayana. Okay, let's see, it's 9:30. Anything else?
Which version of Ramayana do you recommend?
Well, Valmiki is the recommended version. We don't really go for Tulsi Ramayana. Tulsi's Ramayana is very poetic, and it's the most popular Ramayana in the world, is Tulsidas's Ramayana. Tulsidas's Ramayana is very beautiful. And I heard Krishna Kshetra Maharaj give a beautiful recitation on Tulsi's Ramayana about the wedding of Sita and Ram. It was really beautiful. But he wasn't a Vaishnava. He was somewhat of an impersonalist. So some of the things he describes doesn't glorify Sri Ram in his true light. So Prabhupada said, you know, I mean, Tulsi Ramayana is sought out all over the world as the best of all Ramayanas. Well, Valmiki is the authorized. Because Valmiki was authorized. Valmiki was a murderer. He somehow or other came in contact with Narada Muni, and Narada Muni changed his heart completely that he wanted to become a devotee. And so Narada Muni actually encouraged him to chant the holy name of Ram. And he did, but in trying to chant Ram's name, he couldn't. Instead of saying Rama, he couldn't say Rama because he was so sinful. The word Rama would not go on his tongue because of his sinful life. He was a cruel killer. He used to kill animals, kill people. And now, after meeting the sage, Narada, his whole life changed, and he was actually developing saintly qualities. So Narada wanted to purify him further and said, now you can chant the name Rama. So he tried to chant, but he couldn't do it. So Narada said, all right, if you can't chant the name of Rama, chant the name of Mara, which is M-A-R-A, which is the same letters. And Mara means the god of death. So he was chanting Mara 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 Ram 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 Ram. So gradually it changed into Ram. And then he started chanting Ram's name. And then of course he became a great sadhu, actually. And then he actually had a very pure and very changed heart. He was so gentle. No longer his killing tendencies were there in any way. So one day he was traveling with his disciple Bhartaraj, and they saw two beautiful birds. It's a kind of a bird that I forgot the name of the bird, but they go in pairs, and they're loving birds. So there was a man and there was a girl and a boy bird. Male and female. And they were making love. Now this bird is very chaste. If the partner dies, the bird doesn't find another partner.